And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Rizzless Podcast. I'm your host, the head of the table of Raptors Twitter, Blake Murphy, joined, as always, by Eric Green, fresh off a bunch of expletives right as we started recording. Eric, what's up, man?
Not too much, just trying to, I guess, recover from a bunch of concertos last night. Is that the analysis or?
Well, I don't care who you are. Yeah, care. You could pick whoever you want. You could be Bianca Belair if you really like.
That'd be pretty good for me.
Yeah,
cool. But I can't pull that off.
You can't. No. As we pointed out in the WrestleMania Reasonless portion of last week's podcast, Kevin Owens against Sami Zayn is the closest either one of us is going to get to WrestleMania, and especially a WrestleMania against each other. Did you, fair heads up to everyone, we are not going to talk about wrestling. I just want to know if Eric ended up getting to watch that match. We'll talk about Raptors very shortly.
Yeah, I did not watch that match. I might go back and find my way to it, but I did see not the conclusion to the match, the conclusion to them being on screen.
Yes, the angle.
I should say. Yes.
Cool. There you go, everyone. To the 60 to 70% of you who turned the podcast off when we started talking about wrestling, thank you to the 30 to 40% who stuck around. But Eric hasn't finished watching WrestleMania yet, so you don't have to worry about it this week. That's because the Raptors had just a barn burner of a back-to-back over the two nights of WrestleMania. They play the Cleveland Cavaliers on Saturday and the New York Knicks on Sunday, both going head-to-head with WrestleMania. The ratings on the Peacock Network must have been terrible because, obviously, everyone was tuned in first to Sportsnet 360, where no one could find the game on Saturday night. They both ended up being entertaining games in their own ways. The city of Toronto became the first city to ever have rain delays in their basketball and baseball games in the same day. The Raptors-Knicks game was briefly halted as Madison Square Garden's roof was leaking. There was a lot going on this week, good and bad, and a lot of people pulled in different directions in the fan base right now as the Raptors split those two games. Before we get into that, a reminder, you can go to theathletic.com/we the six for a $3.99 a month subscription right now to the written side of our stuff. You could read things like Eric's takeaway on Kem Birch's debut on Sunday night. You can read things like a big feature I have on Freddie Gillespie coming later this week, and all our usual kind of day-to-day coverage of, you know, the games that are happening and, yes, still matter until the standings tell us otherwise, and then the opposite standings will matter. But look, even in a tough season, there's still lots to sort through. There's lots of fun Malachi Flynn stuff and Gary Trent stuff and 18 games left to go. And then, hey, if you're checked out on the 18 games, still sign up, because then you're only 18 games away from off-season content, maybe, if some people in the fan base have their way. Eric, before we get into the week that was, where I think you went 1-2 picking games?
No, I went 2-1. I went because I picked them to lose all three.
Right, and they won 1 of 3.
Yeah.
Those dastardly Cavaliers.
If Jared Allen were healthy, it all would have been different.
So the Raptors lost to the Bulls by 9. They beat the Cavaliers by 20 in a game that they led by 38 in. That Bulls game was kind of their standard fake comeback. And then they lost by 6 to the Knicks. They erased a big deficit, took the lead, and then had a very, very poor stretch run. We're going to talk about some of that and what we could take from it. But the big news from the weekend, especially if you're a fan of Canada basketball on top of just the Raptors, Kem Birch was bought out by the Orlando Magic. He gave back about $410,000 on that deal to be freed from Orlando. He immediately signed with the Toronto Raptors for that exact dollar amount for the rest of the season. Kem Birch was introduced formally on Sunday, but Saturday it took him all of 0.01 seconds to start posting on social media about how excited he was to be a member of the Toronto Raptors. I guess before we get into Birch's fit and what this could mean longer term, I mean, just like the Raptors have had Canadian players before, and I know sometimes there's a risk in getting too excited about the passport over anything else, but it was really, really cool this weekend to see just how excited Kem Birch was and how much this meant to him to be playing for the team he grew up watching, the team him and his dad would drive back to Ottawa on the 401 East after a game, the team he'd yell at the TV with his dad with, you know, his mom has a podcast, a basketball podcast. It was really cool, man. I got a real kick out of Kem Birch's weekend and how much this means to him.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. Like, this is like the first ever progeny of an angry fan to that we know of, yes, to make the team.
As that guy said in your mentions last night, any of you fans complaining about the team right now, if you are not siring the next wave of the Raptors roster, you have no right to complain.
Yeah. So that, like, already makes him more relatable and one of the most likable Raptors of all time, is that he comes from one of y'all. But, yeah, and I think, especially as I topped my story with, in a season that's been so hard to connect, you know, the team and home, and what's gone on has been mostly, you know, crappy. You got a story of a guy playing for the team he grew up rooting for and who's deeply connected to the franchise through his family. And you can see how much it matters to him. Like, it's just a nice thing. And whether it's for 18 more games or this is the start of a longer relationship, both of which I think are, you know, equally on the table, I would say, it's pretty cool. I mean, just on a human level, which we should remember is a big part of basketball and everything. I think it's something to savor. It's something to enjoy. And just another reason to not completely zone out on the remainder of the season, for sure.
Yeah, it's cool. It obviously meant a lot to him. He is not... you know, he's not the most charismatic of speakers. He wasn't cutting a promo about it or anything, but it was very clear how much it meant to him. He got asked about getting to share the floor with Chris Boucher, two guys from the same city. And was he right that it's the first time two Canadians have been on the Raptors at the same time, or were Corey Joseph and Anthony Bennett on the same team? Whoa.
Sorry, just choking on my coffee. Write down the what is liquid not supposed to go down in your throat?
The airway.
Is there a technical term for that?
Anyway. Thank you, Andy.
Yeah. Well, she is a speech language pathologist. I think Bennett was 2015-16.
Right.
And I think Corey Joseph was on that team.
Yeah. Good research, Blake. You, in the host role, calling out Kem Birch for being wrong while not actually knowing if he was wrong.
Well, somebody else supported him in saying that he was wrong, in saying that he was right. So I feel like,
Corey Joseph and Anthony Bennett were on the same team.
Yeah. So, but certainly the first time that two Montrealers have been on the Raptors. Yeah.
And certainly the first time two Canadians who mattered to the team played on the team together.
Yeah.
No offense to Anthony Bennett, who, hey, still in the mix for FIBA in the summer, looked really good in the last qualifiers, but, you know, no G League season this year as he recovers from knee injury, hurt his kind of comeback trail.
Yeah, huge moment in qualifiers already this year. Anthony Bennett did play 84 minutes for the Toronto Raptors over 19 games
before before making space for Jason Thompson, the last big man the Raptors added on the buyout market. You'll remember, of course, that the championship Raptors added Jeremy Lin on the buyout market, who was that year the top buyout target. I think we can, like, safely say that the hand-wringing and the discussion about buyout stuff, like, I certainly understand why people don't like the process of it and how, you know, certain guys like a Andre Drummond or a Blake Griffin, like, it's just so... It's running so counter to the way the CBA was intended to work.
Yeah.
But league-wide, someone broke down, like, who's signed the most buyout guys the last couple years and stuff like that, and... It's the Milwaukee Bucks. It's not just a big market problem. It's the buyout guys go to good teams problem. And the Raptors are, I believe, only one buyout guy short of Milwaukee during that stretch. The Bucks have had four. The Raptors have had Jason Thompson, who was a non-zero. They've had Jeremy Lin, who was the top buyout guy on the market. And now they have Ken Burch, who we were talking about giving up a second-round pick for the Raptors to try to get him at the trade deadline. He ain't nothing.
Yeah, no, he's a good player. If the league wants to fix or increase parity or whatever, you know, they can do something real instead of talking about, you know, fixing the buyout market, which has very little to do with, you know, as you mentioned, sort of market size, and has more to do with winning in general. And even those players often do not change the course of history, I would argue. There have been some moments, you know, a playoff game swung here or there, but for the most part, it's not going to be a big deal. But we can save that for another day, fixing the league. We can do a Fix the League podcast, maybe, in June or whatever.
Sure.
But Ken Burch, yeah, like, he's almost precisely what not precisely. The Raptors could use Nikola Jokic. That'd be good. But short of that, he's going to rebound the ball aggressively. You already saw in the game against the Knicks, he's providing very sound defense, both inside, and I think he switched on to the perimeter, guarding Julius Randle, guarding Alec Burks on one possession. He got switched on to Derrick Rose and forced a long jumper, although Derrick Rose doesn't need to be coerced into such actions for the most part. So he just provides a lot more flexibility and malleability and positional versatility, all the illities on defense. And you know, his offense is certainly limited, and you can see that when he was put next to Freddie Gillespie. That wasn't the only problem with that lineup, but it was a big one. As Nick Nurse tried to see what a lineup without spacing might look like in the, I believe, second quarter for the most part of the Raptors game against the Knicks. But he's a nice piece, and it gives you a look at how he might help next year if he can be had for sort of, you know, a cheaper contract.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously he plugs a hole the rest of the way here, but I think the thing to keep in mind with Burch, he's going to play down the stretch. He got 18 minutes last night. I would assume that's about the amount he'll play, and he's good. But, you know, whether or not the Raptors can make a push to the play-in here, I think what's... the most interesting thing about the Burch experiment here is, how does he look? Where's the comfort level? And is he a piece moving forward? Because he's not, you know, he's not prospect aged anymore at 28, but he's got probably a couple more solid years as a good backup center. And the Raptors could use that. Even if you like Freddie Gillespie, as I do, or you want them to take one of the many bigs projected to go in the second round this year, you know, those guys can always benefit from some G League time or protecting their minutes a little bit. And yes, the Raptors will want to address the starting center position in some way, but having, you know, if Burch is a fit and, you know, things work out, him as a low-cost backup center who really wants to be there and is a good culture setter and stuff, there are certainly worse things. So hopefully that works out. If things play out such that Birch and the Raptors determine that that's a longer-term fit, it could also have some benefit to Canada basketball. The FIBA the Olympic qualifying tournament is still, as of right now, scheduled to take place in Victoria in late June, early July. That would overlap with the NBA playoffs, so you're looking at a team that doesn't have Canadians going on a deep run in the playoffs. Generally, players who are free agents are hesitant to participate because insurance on a contract you haven't signed yet is difficult. But, you know, if Birch thrives or fits down the stretch here and there's a bit of a handshake thing that the Raptors are interested, maybe that helps.
Whoa. Let's not go breaking the CBA here.
Well, I mean, look, it's...
I'm joking. It's fine.
Also, like, Birch has been pretty clear that, like, he wants to play in the Olympics really badly. So, you know, that's maybe more of a consideration for a Kelly Olynyk in Houston, where the chatter out of there is they'd like to keep him as a kind of vet as they rebuild a bit. And, you know, maybe that's a bigger question with a guy like that. But, yeah, I mean, I think Birch could be a guy for Canada basketball. There was also a very cool Mark Stein story in the New York Times Sunday about how the people who have organized Victoria getting the Olympic qualifying tournament have also secured the court that the Raptors won the championship on. So as Canada tries to qualify for the Olympics, assuming everything goes ahead as planned in late June, they'll be doing so on the same Golden State Warriors court that obviously repurposed for Olympic qualifiers, but the same court the Raptors won the championship on, which I thought is a really cool touch.
That is, it's super neat. Whoever, you know,
Shopify,
whoever thought about it, very, very impressive. I think obviously Ken Birch has played for Canada before. Again, you're sort of, You think about roster construction and you think about who might be available. I think Tristan Thompson is signed through.
He has an option. Season. Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see how many centers they can take, but I think mostly they'll probably just take the best players that are available, and then it becomes, you know, this isn't a Canada basketball preview, but you start rooting against the Denver Nuggets and rooting for the Milwaukee Bucks. It's that simple, right?
I mean, look, it might be because, you know, anyway, we'll see how that plays out. Anyway, shout out to Scott Lake, who is a part of Spotify and also Canada Basketball's...
Shopify.
Shopify, yes, sorry. Yeah. I have enough friends that work at Shopify. You think I would stop making that mistake. But, you know, I listen to music a lot more than I shop. So apologies to Shopify. Shout out to Scott Lake for kind of spearheading that. All right, so I guess the one other question that flows from Ken Birch's edition and... a little unexpectedly, Freddie Gillespie being the first big off the bench on Sunday. Have we seen the last of Aron Baynes in real minutes?
I mean, something's going to happen to somebody. So probably not. But I think it will... That answer... While the answer will technically be no, I think it's a spiritual yes. If
Understood.
That makes sense.
Understood.
Yeah.
Okay. So the week that
I can
was...
write that report card blurb now is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So the Raptors went 1-2 this week. Birch is obviously the most notable thing, but I did think that the weekend kind of highlighted the two minds the fan base seems to be of right now.
Sure did.
And Saturday they beat a team that was... How do you word this? That was just ahead of them in the reverse standings?
Yeah.
Is that the way you say it?
Just behind them in the standings.
Yeah.
Either way.
Cleveland's...
The Raptors only beat teams which they might be able to pass in the reverse standings.
Now, as I tried to explain writing off of Saturday night, I understand that some fans don't really want the team to be winning more games right now. The lottery odds have become flatter in such that, you know, you don't really need to bottom all the way out. Obviously, more ping pong balls are better, but there's not you know, it's not the worst team is not getting a 25% shot at the number one pick anymore. They're only getting 14%, and those odds are spread out among the other spots. So the further you can slide down, the more ping pong balls you'll get, the more that solidifies your worst possible draft position. But these swings aren't...
Which is probably more important, but yeah, are likely to be more important.
Yeah, like, yeah, if you finish 7th last in the standings, you can't fall lower than 11th, and your average expected pick is 6.2. That's, you know, that's kind of the snapshot that you keep in mind. Bigger picture, like, the Raptors are not going to go 18-0 down the stretch to push back into the playoffs, and they're not going to go 0-18 to bottom out completely. They're going to win games, and they're going to lose games. And there is a certain style of win and loss that is better than another. And I thought Saturday was just about a perfect kind of development end of season win. Malachi Flynn, Gary Trent Jr., Yuta Watanabe all played probably their best games as Raptors. Freddie Gillespie played real minutes on a 10-day contract and looked solid. This very, very shorthanded team. And yes, it was against the Cavs, and the Cavs' defense was lightly engaged, to be polite. But if they're going to win games, you know, a game where Malachi Flynn gets a ton of reps running the offense, and he gets to run the offense when things are clicking, and then he gets to run the offense as the opponent makes a comeback and the offense isn't clicking, or Gary Trent gets to expand his self-creation a little bit, or you get a look at a Freddie Gillespie, you know, all of those things are the type of positives you can move forward with. And I'm not saying Gillespie's the backup center next year and Utah's suddenly going to get converted, but you'd much rather win with those things happening than Stanley Johnson gets hot from three, or, you know, Aaron Baines has a couple dunks. You want the wins need to come in positive developmental ways for people who are still going to be on this roster next year. Now Sunday was a little bit of the counter of that, where that was a very winnable game that they lost to, yes, a somewhat surprising 500 team, and another good RJ Barrett game, including a very clutch three-pointer on kind of a botched defensive switch for the Raptors. Yeah. If you are the type of person who wants the Raptors to lose more often, that was kind of the ideal loss, where, again, you get some young guys playing bigger roles and getting to stretch themselves a little bit. The game is entertaining. And then you lose by a little bit in the end. And you keep my story alive of them being the worst team to outscore opponents on the year. Eric, where are you at on those two games? You know, you wrote off the Knicks game. I wrote off the Cavs game. You know, it's a weird spot. Like yeah. I said, they're not going to go 18-0 or 0-18. So where are you at in terms of how we evaluate process over results night to night?
Well, I sort of go back to the piece I wrote about how to view a season that is falling short of expectations, or, to put it less nicely, going nowhere in terms of the standings. And the most important part of all of that was development. And if you happen to make a run based on, you know, sure, you're established players, but also Malachi Flynn and Yuta Watanabe making, you know, really solid, meaningful contributions, then you accept it and you enjoy it and you see what happens. So I think the general direction that Nick Nurse seems to be taking with these minutes now, and, you know, I can argue all day that it should have happened a bit earlier, but in his defense, he only had so many bodies to use for a lot of that stretch. I think you got to feel good about the way things go. Like, you want to see Gary Trent sort of find a way to get himself 40 points in a, you know, without Fred VanVleet, without Kyle Lowry.
To have the most efficient 40-point night in Raptors history with only one point guard on the roster, yeah.
Like, I think we've seen enough from him to say that he's going to be a high-variance player, and he is capable of having a dud just as easily as he's capable of, you know, blowing up right now. But on the, you know, the ledger, like, I think it's been a lot more positive than negative. And that's a great sign. Malachi Flynn fitting in really well, figuring out what to do defensively, I think beyond both of our expectations, and getting, I thought he had a really good second half against New York. He missed some big threes, and those would have been nice, but they're shots. Like, you know, like, there's a lot of reasons to trust this guy's track record in terms of making open shots. And he'll probably get there. And if he was a bit tired on the back end, in the fourth quarter of the back end of a back-to-back, and that caused or led to missing those shots, that's understandable. And maybe even ideal for some of you out there. I think it was 2 weeks ago where I said, I think it's probably a bit better that the Raptors don't make the play-in tournament, I guess, and maximize those odds just for their long-term future. And I still, like, feel that way for the most part. But as I also wrote in that piece about how to watch this type of season, if you just obsess over the standings, normal or reverse, it's really going to sap a lot of potential joy, and not even joy, just, like, interfere with your ability to identify what's important about the future that's actually happening in front of you. Like, yeah,
if you're gonna get mad at a good Malachi Flynn game, you're missing the plot.
Yeah, like, it's sort of a live in the moment type of thing, but the moment doesn't have to be about the win. The moment can be about, you know, how something might contribute to future wins, but something that already exists, not a theoretical future something, if that makes sense.
It sure does. To update you on those standings, by the way, the Raptors are 2 games back of the Bulls for the final play-in spot. The Bulls have the tiebreaker there, and then it's a big jump to the next spot. The Raptors are 5 back of Indiana, who had a strong week as the Raptors continued to struggle. So that... I mean, you can make up 5 games in 18 games, but that might be down to just a chase of the Bulls there. Looking the other direction, the Raptors are in 8th last, but they are only a game and a half from being 5th last. So, again, those of you who are pro-losing or anti-winning for the next little while, you have some high leverage games coming up. You have some big ones. I mean, they play Atlanta and San Antonio next, both of those teams hoping to make the playoffs or jockeying for playoff position. But then they play Orlando and Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City is only a half game away, and Orlando, who is, you know, maybe out of reach in the reverse standings, but still not, you know, not completely gone. And then they have games left against Cleveland, Washington, and Chicago and Indiana again. So, and they've got that...
and they've got a bunch of impossible games,
too. Yes, they do have a 4-game West Coast trip where they play Denver, Utah, and the Lakers on a back-to-back, and the Clippers. So those of you who want some L's might get your wish soon.
Yeah, you can pencil in 3.5 losses there, I would say.
But they might win a couple on this 5-game homestand that starts Tuesday. They continue this wild 9-game and 14-day stretch with another back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday, Atlanta and the Spurs, and then they play Orlando, OKC, Brooklyn.
Yeah, the one rescheduled game really messed things up, not only for both of us in terms of enjoying, well, I watched WrestleMania Night 1 in full, but you didn't get to watch it in real time at all.
No, so, I watched it the next day.
Yeah, so we could have had that. And had it been a shared moment and only made this podcast stronger. Yeah. But instead,
hey, remember a couple weeks ago when we thought it might be possible to do like a backyard beer or something like that? And now
you're not supposed to leave
further,
your house.
Further locked down than we've been at any point. Awesome.
Yeah. It's cool. It's good. we'll do a progressive conservative. No, they're just called the Conservative Party of Canada, reasonablists. Tomorrow. Yeah. It will be an unrecorded podcast.
Okay, so that's kind of the snapshot of where the team is at and the direction fans might be getting pulled. Again, as always, you are obviously welcome to feel however you want to feel about those things. But some
but
of
you
the,
should feel you should feel how we tell you to feel.
No,
that
you
is
should
the
just,
correct way to feel.
You know, it's like the championship year. You're never as high as the highs. You're never as low as the lows. You know, you just you got to have an even keel about it as much as you can. And again, we talked about some positives to take from the week. Gary Trent Jr. Pushing his numbers up. He's been, you know, you look at his 10 games with the Raptors now. He's been pretty efficient, and he's been pretty efficient on the smallest diet of assisted baskets that he's had in his career. So he's shown a little bit more self-creation. Obviously, still a lot of development to come with Gary Trent. You're seeing things within these games where it's like, wow, if he could, you know, change this or add this layer. Right now, he's a guy that doesn't put any pressure on the rim. Great that he's been so efficient in the role he's playing, but you can see... And this isn't a bad thing. It's actually a positive. You can see areas for growth that,
for sure,
you know, the Raptors will try to get him in the player development pipeline and get working on him. The other kind of, we've touched on him a couple times, and I think he warrants a little bit more discussion because I thought Saturday was the best game he's played so far as a pro, is Malachi Flynn. And he's, over the last six games, gotten to average 33 minutes. He's not shooting crazy efficiently inside the arc, but the three-point shot is coming along. He's averaged 13 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and almost 1 block over that stretch of play. Perhaps more notably, especially given some of the lineups he's been tasked with carrying or anchoring, and keep in mind that Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry each only played one game during this stretch, Malachi Flynn has the best net rating on the Raptors over the last six games. The Raptors have outscored opponents by 14.4 points per 100 possessions when Malachi Flynn is on the floor. That's better than OG, Boucher, or Pascal, so it's not strictly them helping lift his... Now, of course, Stanley Johnson is the only player who's played big minutes who has a negative net rating over that stretch. The Golden State games and the Cleveland game both being in those last six games is obviously helping these numbers a little bit. But Sunday was the first time in six games that Malachi Flynn had a negative plus minus. So, you know, we don't live and die by plus minus or net rating, especially with convoluted lineups out there a lot. But his growth seems to at least be contributing to positive play for the team. And that's, you know, Nick Nurse says this all the time. He's not going to evaluate Malachi Flynn by if he shot 8 of 14 or if he shot 2 of 9. It's, is he helping the team win? And for the most part, these last 2 weeks, I think he has been.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I know you're not talking about on-off numbers, but somebody once said to me, like, on-off numbers tell you a lot more about the person who's replacing them, as opposed to what they actually do. And when you're, as a point guard, being replaced by not a point guard, that's going to potentially lead to some struggles. So it sort of makes sense that just the level of organization that Malachi Flynn brings, which is weird to say as a rookie, but yeah, and like we should take that as a positive. He is having the effect that a professional point guard should have on a team, is in that he's like making things make a lot more sense out there on the floor. That's like a very elemental way of sort of looking at all of that, I think. But I think it's also correct in a large way. So he's looked pretty good. Like, again, even though he shot, well, it was a 2 for 9 last night, I thought he had a lot of really good moments. And I'd have to see the switch on the Barrett three again, but I'm tempted to say that was probably Pascal Siakam's fault, given that he made a few other defensive blunders last night.
It was a little hard to tell because the Raptors will do that weak corner switch because that's a pretty common thing for the shooter on the corner and the shooter on the wing to switch, because what you're trying to do if you're the Knicks is you're trying to pull Pascal Siakam out of paint help territory and bring him up higher on the floor so there's less rim protection. So the Raptors will switch that a lot. They trust Pascal guarding a lot of guys. It looked like either Siakam and Flynn weren't on the same page or there was a miscommunication, because Flynn had to do that kind of late scramble out to Randall. And then, you know, Randall made a good pass once the paint help came. So I don't know where the blame falls exactly. That seems to be as much miscommunication as anything. But
it was a switch. Go ahead.
Well, like you said, Siakam had a couple defensive gaffes in that game and maybe doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt on that play, given how else he played.
Yeah, communication has to be better, bottom line. And that, it didn't seem like a play that warranted a switch. Like, it wasn't that complicated of a set, and it wasn't that dangerous of a situation. But easy for me to say, a lot harder to do in practice, and we're getting a field from the initial point, which is that Malachi Flynn has played really nicely, and if it is such that he is your backup point guard heading into next year with maybe a little competition coming from elsewhere, coming from a free agent, coming from a prospect, or if Kyle Lowry is back and it's just a more regular three-point guard lineup, and that's just a thing they find that becomes part of their normal rotation as part of a break glass in case of emergency type thing, I think you feel pretty good about that given what he's shown you lately. So we can quibble, and we did it last week. Like, I think I know that Flynn working on his long two is important for his development. I'd just like to see his choosiness with when he takes those shots. Like, if there are there's six on the clock, sure, cool. If it's your first action and it's semi-covered and there's 16 on the clock, like, maybe keep the ball moving or keep moving yourself and survey it. And I thought he showed a little bit of that on Sunday. But these are minor things, and he will get better with it in time. And I thought Kyle Lowry, talking about him after the game, just saying that the thing that he's been talking to Malachi Flynn about, and you saw him on the broadcast last night, like, he was in his ear a lot.
He was sprinting all over the floor just trying to talk to him at breaks and plays. Yeah, it was hilarious.
He was sort of saying, like, I've been telling him, like, the scoring will come, and that's not something you need to worry about. Just, you know, get everybody into the right place, orchestrate things in the right way, and I think, you know, progression isn't a straight line, but it's trending in the right direction, and that's great.
One other positive from the last couple games, not to be too positive in a 1-2 stretch, but Yuta's back.
Oh, baby.
Playing real rotation minutes these last six games, and in particular, the last four, he's really started to score it a little bit. He's, 37 points over the last four games, which is, you know, by far the most he's scored. Actually, he had one other four-game stretch with 37 points. I was about to lie to you. There was that stretch back in late January when he was in the rotation when he scored 37 over four games. But career-high 14 points against the Cavs, 8-7-8 in the other games, you know, contributing on the boards and with steals. He is back firmly in the rotation, I think. He looks a little more confident offensively. Nick Nurse thinks that ankle injury that sidelined him back in February lingered a little bit more than maybe we expected, at least in terms of his comfort level and confidence. Yuta is back on the radar as a guy and maybe a contract conversion candidate at the end of the year.
I have a theory about Yuta Watanabe, and it's this. He is a solid back-end NBA rotation player, full stop.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a really good 12th or 13th man, right? Is what you're trying to say, kind of?
I might even say 10th or 11th, but, like, you know, basically, yes. Like, if he is playing 8 minutes a night, 10 minutes a night, like, he brings such energy and such soundness in terms of decision making on both ends that he's a really easy player to fit in, and he can find a way to fit in those minutes. It's sort of, you know, there were questions about Chris Boucher saying he finds it easier to start and he's had more energy when he's starting. And we've heard this from other, I don't mean to pick on Chris Boucher, like, who knows how many other players have said this. It's sort of, not that Yuta Watanabe's ever, like, in serious danger of being a starter unless things have gone horribly wrong with the roster, but you don't have to worry about that with him. He's going to, like, crash the boards like a madman. He's going to, for the most part, take shots that are there and take no other shots. Defensively, like, Nick Nurse was as complimentary of his defense last night as he has been all season. He's pretty damn good. Like, you can stick him in front of a whole bunch of players and he can stick with them. I'd go so far as to say he's one of their best just on ball defenders, in terms of just keeping man in front of you. That's all. And that's not to say that I'm not trying to pick apart his team defense, but I think the Raptors have got into trouble this year when they have been forced into rotations, and they, you know, doesn't take a genius to see how they have not been as effective this year in forcing the types of three-pointers that they would like to force as they were last year when they were, you know, historically elite at that, even though they were letting up a ton of three-pointers. The opposition was not making them, and I think we can get into this at the end of the season, and I know you did a bit when you were dissecting the defense, but it was, you know, maybe a bit of regression, natural regression has been involved too. But as Jack Armstrong often says, like, before you start scrambling, just keep your man in front of you. That has to be a priority, and it's really hard to do in the NBA, and Watanabe is somebody who can do that fairly reliably. So I just think he's a really solid player, and I'd like to see him in the system for a few more years.
Me too. All right, we're running a little long, so we got to do the negative side of this a little quicker. these are positives and negatives. Alize Johnson has signed a multi-year deal with the Nets. Some success there. O'Shea Brissett got a second 10-day.
I blame our G League coverage, personally, for not pushing Alize Johnson hard enough.
Yeah. Gary Payton Jr. signed with the Warriors, and O'Shea Brissett signed a second 10-day with the Pacers, and Dante Hall signed with the Magic. So the 905 graduating guys all over the place. Kind of hilarious that Freddie Gillespie is the guy on the Raptors right now. As the rest of the league poaches 905 guys, the Raptors go outside the org. I do like Freddie, though, and have a fun feature coming on him later this week. Keep an eye out for that at theathletic.com/WeTheSix if you're not a subscriber yet. Eric, the big negative from maybe not the whole week, but certainly Sunday, the up and down of Pascal Siakam. The downs have at times been overstated, and like he's become a kind of a weird case where some people get so negative about him that even like a moderate take on him seems overly positive to those people. He has not been, you know, he's still showing those playmaking improvements, career high free throw rate, stuff like that. However, he is back to being fairly inconsistent defensively. I thought he just had a bad game overall on Sunday, and he
zero rebounds in 36 minutes, which is hard to do.
And he continues to struggle late in games with the ball in his hands. Obviously, a clutch double dribble in Sunday's game. He's missed a number of late game looks. You know, I don't know. Those are tiny snapshots, but there are enough of them now that Maybe we worry just a little bit that he's kind of back in his own head in those situations. I thought the double dribble, like Kyle Lowry explained after the game, was like fairly understandable given what happened on the play. But it was part of a larger bad night, yeah. And it was part of a larger consistent struggle to pull out these close games.
I got a mostly jokey during the 87-point first half on Saturday WhatsApp message from a friend saying Ewing theory with Siakam and the offense.
Yes.
Because he's been the guy holding the Raptors offense back.
Surely.
Which, I mean, I think my friend is legitimately frustrated with Siakam, as many fans are, but, you know, he didn't actually mean that, I think. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's at this point, you can throw out so many caveats that it becomes, you start to wonder what's excuse making and what's not. And that is not to make this some grand point about our time, like the capital T times we live in, but it's a complicated time to assess a basketball player who has, you know, dealt with the pandemic in any number, in basically all of the ways, or in many of the ways. But it's a big enough sample now where I think there's some legitimate worry about how his offensive game is developing in certain situations. Like, you love to see the playmaking. He made some great passes. He's made some great passes to Chris Boucher over the last few games that he's been out there, again against the Knicks. But, like, his, you know, he just doesn't finish strongly enough right now at the rim. That's one thing. His defensive attentiveness really hurt the Raptors, I should say, against the Knicks. And I think there was a stretch there where his defense was back at a level I don't think we'd seen since his most improved year. And that's certainly fallen off since he's returned from the lineup. And I think it's not easy to see, to guess why. Like, he played 41 and then 36 minutes in a back-to-back after coming back from COVID. So that is another factor that makes it difficult to say. But I think, you know, it's a huge summer for him. His handle is still something that he needs to work on, and dribbling in traffic is a big thing for him. He's going to have to find a few more counters and creative ways to finish at the rim, and he just needs to get a full summer of conditioning work. I'm not saying he's poorly conditioned, and if he is right now, there are, again, obvious reasons, but to where he can carry a 25-27% usage and be a consistent difference maker on his defense. Because as good as Fred VanVleet is defensively, and he really is, like, if this team is going to be elite once more on defense, it's OG Anunoby and it's Pascal Siakam. They are the keys to unlocking all of that. And it can't be just one of them. It has to be both of them. So we'll see how he comes back next year. There are some legitimate concerns about how he's finishing games offensively. And I don't think you're wrong to feel any sort of way about it, other than to recognize that he's gone through quite a bit, and there's still a lot we don't know about how human beings recover from all of the effects of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well, Eric. That's all there is to say, I guess, about it.
Sorry.
No, that's great, because we're running long anyway. So, look ahead. We laid out the 5-game homestand. 4 of those games are in the coming week: Atlanta, San Antonio, Orlando, and OKC, before we talk to you next. Eric, Fred VanVleet is out. He's at least 2 games away. He still has to serve his 1-game suspension, and he can't do that until he's cleared. And to all the people wanting the Raptors to just lie about it, if they were to clear him and then he serves his suspension and then he's still not ready to come back, then he would probably have to sit another game, or the team could be punished. So I would assume whenever he is listed as suspension instead of hip, that means he's getting very close. But as of right now, that's not the case. So he's at least
I too am interested in that. I know we're running long, but like fundamentally or theoretically, I should say, what's to stop them from saying he's okay to play, serve the suspension, and then say, oh, he re-aggravated something or he woke up a little sore and we're just playing it safe with him now. Even if he was like never clear to actually play. I know the league could investigate, but what could they possibly find?
I mean, conclusive? They could, I don't know, they could require, like, they could be like, hey, we want an independent doctor to sign off on this.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I'm interested in. Like, is there an independent doctor that that has to be used in these situations?
I don't know, anyway. maybe if they try to do it against Atlanta, they will have Atlanta's team doctor check them out and determine. Yeah, so
would you let Trae Young play?
So he's at least two games away. You know, the rotation at some point when the team is healthy, I think, like, the context clues suggest to me that maybe they'll go back to starting small and Boucher, Birch will be the bench bigs. Just because, like, Boucher starting and Birch and Gillespie being your bench bigs is going to introduce some offensive struggle. And Gillespie only has a couple days left on his 10-day, but so I guess just predict him, Eric. I'd say, like, we should talk about what the rotation is going to look like, but Nick Nurse has not exactly made it a secret that in this 9-14 and 4-5 stretch, more rest could be coming. So with another back-to-back coming up, you know, who knows? Maybe someone else sits down. Maybe Gary Trent gets a night off. Who knows? But Atlanta, San Antonio, Orlando, OKC, all of them at quote-unquote home in Tampa Bay. Eric, what do you got for us?
I'm going to go, I guess this is chalk. Loss, loss, win, win. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're obviously going to lose the back-to-back against San Antonio.
Yeah, and they're definitely going to beat OKC, just to make people really mad.
Not producer Andrew. He will be thrilled.
And Orlando is, like, unspeakably bad.
Exactly. Like, I can't... I mean, they've already lost to Oklahoma City, so let's not... without, like, all of their players, so let's not rule it out. But I'm going loss, loss, win, win. I still believe I'm looking for my first perfect week. I did go 3-0 one week, but that was the week where the game against Chicago was postponed. So
you did not predict a postponement.
Yes. So it was not purely perfect. So maybe by the end of the year, I will run one off. But I wouldn't bet on it.
The Magic, by the way, have lost 5 in a row, and only one of those games has been decided by single digits. They are...
they bad.
They are going through it. All right. So that's the week ahead. We got 4 games before we talk to you next. Hopefully, there will be... once again, some positives to take away from this week, whatever direction that goes in. With Fred VanVleet still out, at least for the Atlanta game, I would like to see Malachi Flynn get a shot at guarding Trae Young. That's probably the thing that I'm most looking forward to in the week ahead, other than seeing DeMar obviously hit a game winner in the San Antonio game. Yeah. That is happening.
He had one last night, didn't he?
He sure did. He sure did. Like, almost at the same time as Siakam committing that turnover. So, it'll be a fun week. It's always fun to see DeMar and Jakob and the Spurs. And, yeah. I mean, the Magic and Thunder game won't be sexy.
Television.
Yeah, they could be fun ones, though. So, we will talk to you guys next week after those 4... probably sorting through some of the same stuff because the Raptors are in standings purgatory. Eric, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Blake. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.